So, tell me about the stories that you write. Why do you choose to write plays?
Why do I choose to write plays?
Mm-hmm.
We're going back now. I was a reporter in Chicago, covering like the police beat at midnight, from mm-hmm. midnight to like 8 in the morning, and it was very dreary and depressing, and seeing dead bodies and working with cops and being like 20 years old, and cops are really chauvinistic. And I called my college roommate, who is now a rather prominent director, Mark Brokaw, and I said, this is so depressing. And he said, he was at Yale at the time studying in the directing program, and he said, write a play. And I think he just wanted to get me off the phone. But so I said, okay. And he said, send it to me. And so I wrote a play, and I sent it to him. And I enjoyed it. And from that, and he critiqued it, and I rewrote it, and sent it back to him, and this started a process mm-hmm. between him and me. And I just enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed collaborating, and I enjoy that. I can't think of another art form where I need other people to bring it forth. It's not done until other people get on board, and I can't think of another art form like that. I guess maybe film is like that. So I really enjoyed, I didn't expect to get into playwriting. I mean, I expected to be trapped as a reporter and a journalist and all that stuff, and had visions of that, but I enjoyed it, and I really liked the collaboration, and I like going to places in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's sort of why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work. They take like 2 or 3 years to finish. They're just a lot of work, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. So what kind of stories do you write about?
God, that's hard. I mean, the play I just finished that we did in the warm-up laps of the Boston Theater Marathon is a play called Romeo Chang, and it's about a... I think if I was to characterize my plays, I would say... I think I take a human situation and heighten it in the language and the story, and to convey a certain message that might be easier to digest if you're seeing it in kind of a heightened way.
Mm-hmm.
So the plays are very theatrical and very language-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on a play now about capital punishment. I just started it like 2 weeks ago, because I was fascinated by, you know, this botched execution that happened in Oklahoma?
No.
This guy who, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, he was on the table, and what they do is they sedate you, and then they inject the, whatever it is that kills you. And they failed to sedate him, so he suffered through his execution. And shortly before that, like 6 months ago, I read about this, woman, her name is Judy Green, and she was featured in the New York Times. She paints last meals on plates. She's really cool. And I got in touch with her, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to weave this into a play, but I think what you do is so cool. Can I do something with it? And she wrote back, and she said, sure. And actually, she sent me The Last Supper. These are all the plates of these of everybody, the last meals of people. And sometimes people said, I don't want anything. So they have an empty plate. And so I'm weaving in the story of a guy who was the next to go after a botched execution with an artist who is coming to talk to him about what is your last meal. And somehow I'm hoping to, because really what she talks about is choice. Like, people who are on death row, people who are in jail, don't have a lot of choice. And that's my daughter's cell phone. So, I'm kind of rambling here, but I guess what I'm trying to do in this play is to talk about, there's three characters, and they all are people who have limited choices, and what that means when how your life progresses when your choices are limited, and what
mm-hmm.
does that do to your psyche. But My plays are all very different from each other in their topic. The play before that was a play called Romeo Chang, which is about a woman who is pregnant and dying. And she's been totally, Western medicine has said, forget it. And she seeks out a Qigong master, which is a healer, sort of Eastern medicine healer. And she wants him to keep her alive long enough for her to have the baby. She has no pretense of living, but she wants to be kept alive. So it's about the relationship between her and this Qigong master. And that's very different from Capital Punishment. I mean, each huge thing is sort of just whatever is going on in my life at the time. And I actually had met someone who was trained by a Qigong master. They are unbelievable, these people.
Wow.
They can do... I then, after she was telling me all this stuff, I went and Googled Qigong masters. There was a Bill Moyers special on them, and he interviewed like this 100-year-old guy, and looked like he was going to keel over, and he was a Qigong master, and they have this ability to harness energy. And he put his hands up like this, and there was two rows of like 20-year-old men and standing in front of him, and he put his hands like this, and they just fell over like dominoes. And this was just the coolest thing to me. Their healing powers, their energy power, and this was like for real.
Wow.
And so, I don't know. I don't know why that just like was exciting to me.
Yeah.
So those are just two examples of my stuff, but they're very different. Each topic is different, but I do have a style, that's for sure.
Which writers do you take inspiration from?
I love Beckett. I love Beckett. I love Sam Shepard. I love, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy. There's a guy in New York, Daniel Talbot. He's great. There's somebody coming here. She actually read a play of mine, but she's also a writer. Jessica Dickey. These are like...
Yeah, she wrote, what's it called? The Amish Project?
She wrote The Amish Project.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
Yeah.
She actually is also a great actress, and she did it. I had a reading in New York at Rattlestick, and she's great. I love her writing. I like Ethel Fugard. I really like Ethel Fugard. God, I've seen some of his stuff just blew me away. I like Paula Vogel.
I love Paula Vogel, yeah.
The Long Christmas Ride Home, do you ever see that play?
No.
I mean, How I Learned to Drive is fantastic, but The Long Christmas Ride Home was so good. I really like her stuff. I like John Guare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I like people who kind of play with reality to show you reality, because I think that's what I'm trying to do.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
What about the language aspect? Because you said that you write a lot of heightened
language. Yeah.
Heightened language.
Right. Well, I think that's probably why people like Sam Shepard or Beckett or Granite. I don't know why I'm just throwing that thinking of Master Hill and the Boys. What a great play. So I think these are all people who they don't write kitchen sink stuff. I don't really like to go to plays that are kitchen sink stuff. I like The Nottage. Oh,
yeah.
She's great. Yeah, I think, although we just saw Death of a Salesman, and I really was like, I don't want to go. It was great. I forgot how good that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a reason why these things are I like Tennessee Williams, you know?
Yeah. No, it's interesting about sort of how even a classic can still really hit you now. I mean, my grandma always tells the story that I guess that was one of the first plays that she saw when she was around my age. Yeah.
Really?
And she said that was the only time in the theater that she saw anybody stand up and go brava and clap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was there.
That's an amazing play.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you see it, like, in New York?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. So you have that to share with your grandmother, which is also cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Are there moments like that where you're sitting in an audience and you just really connect to something
totally.
On stage?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's rare, but when it happens, it's just, where you're just like, And sometimes it surprises me because I don't really like musicals, but when I went to Billy Elliot, did you see Billy Elliot?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
The moment where he's attached to the wire and he's sent out flying, it just like catches your breath.
Yeah.
Or in Wit at the very end, that final moment of Wit. So, yeah, but it's, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs, I think, before you see, like, you know, one of those, just like, okay, this is why I'm here. Yeah.
Do you think women writers tell different stories than men writers?
That's a great question. I don't know. I really don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It's funny because I think that's one of the hardest questions that I have asked people.
And it seems like it's sort of the center of your...
Yeah, I guess in a way it's just sort of, I don't think anybody has said yes yet.
Huh.
No, I don't think anybody's been like, yes, women write different stories than men. But I think they've said that women writers touch upon things that a male writer wouldn't touch upon because it's not part of their experience.
Right.
You know, it's just not something that they experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of examples. I mean, I was talking to Aditi today, and she said that, you know, there were specific moments with, like, a miscarriage or different things that
right.
just would not have been
right.
shown unless it were a woman writer who was writing it.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't know what
right.
you think.
I don't know what I think. I mean, I'm actually wondering if I, like, blindly was watching, like, if nobody told me Death of a Salesman was written by a man, would I know it? And I feel like I would know if it was a male or female writer without knowing the name. I just saw The Whale.
Oh,
and,
who is that by? The
Sam Hunter.
Okay.
And that was clearly written by a I would not have, that was written by a man, for sure. So I think they probably do, given that I think that. I saw a great piece at Oberon called The Shape She Makes. Was that good? It was more of a dance piece than it was sort of a dance theater piece. I would say, I'm trying to think of a play I've seen where I was surprised by the sex of the writer. And I'm in a playwriting group in Boston, and it's clear that the plays by men are male. I mean, the plays that are written by men are written by men, and the plays that are written by women are written. So there is a thing, but it's not tangible in my head. It's more abstract. It seems like a nuance, something nuanced, or a thread, or a vibe, rather than so I guess I think men and women playwrights are both skilled, but there probably is a vibe that comes through. I mean, I'm trying to imagine a man writing Ruined, you know?
Right.
Or a man writing Wit, or
yeah, that's a good point. Actually, we're at our school where we're not doing the vagina monologues anymore. We're creating our own monologues instead, and that's been a new thing. Is do we allow men, our allies, to write with us? But the thing is that I think some people are having a hard time with it because myself included. I think because it's not a woman's story, I guess, in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yes. Men have successfully written women, and women have successfully written men. But
right.
if there's something, I guess, that we're looking for that I think can only really be accomplished by having our student, you know, our you know, female
but
students
what you
writing.
Exactly, you're
so we're actually we're not doing the vagina monologues anymore. We've been doing it for years, and I guess you know we've sort of been trying to tackle. There's things in the show that we've been having a hard time with, and
I've
so.
Never seen it.
Oh, yeah. There's just, I mean, it's hard for, like, the transgender community and for other people, you know, because if you don't have a vagina, you can't connect to it in a very specific way. And other issues with race and things that, you know.
Right.
So we're trying to sort of actually write our own monologues to be produced. And so we kind of did a trial run this year a little bit.
So what would you be addressing then? Just your, what would be the question?
That's the hard thing, and we're still trying to figure that out right now,
yeah.
I guess.
So is it intended to be more inclusive?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's supposed to be a wider, you know, people from different backgrounds that really weren't represented in the vagina monologues can be now included.
Do you mean sort of gender-related, like transgender, or do you actually mean also, was she sort of selected, was it not racially mixed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard because I feel like I'm not the best at, I don't know it as well as I think other people do,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I think that race was very specifically touched upon, and I think it's a little outdated right now, like,
yeah,
you know?
I
don't know, I think that in its time it was,
I think so.
I mean, just so...
Right.
So beneficial. But I think that now, I think there's some other issues that need to kind of come
right.
to the forefront.
Right.
You know?
Right. That would make sense. I mean, I think it should. It should think times change.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about it. I know that, you know, the cause behind it has been so great, and the money that has been raised and things like that is really great. And just actually, as you were saying that, I was thinking of... a writer, this is going back to the other question, like Tennessee Williams, who writes these amazing women.
Right.
And he was gay. So I'm actually wondering if it's more, if do, you know, where sort of the gay male voice comes in,
mm-hmm.
in terms of writing female. I would have thought, actually, like Streetcar Named Desire was written by a woman because he just totally nails the female, a certain kind of female.
Yeah, so sexuality and sort of how that plays into it.
Yeah. But I never thought about it until right now that you really could blindly like sit in a theater and think this play is written by man. This play is written by woman. I think it feels like I would know that. So there must be something up with that.
Mm. Which writers today do you think are successfully representing gender on stage?
What does it mean to represent gender?
I don't know. I've been having a really hard time with this question. I've been changing it every single time.
What are you trying to get at?
I don't know. It's just like if you see a play and they... Just the characters on stage that they're... can't even now describe it. I had changed it originally. I think it was successfully doing gender parody on stage.
Hmm.
But then I changed it because somebody had asked me, well, what is gender parody?
That's my husband asked me that. He said, what is gender parody?
And I still can't just, you know, I can't define it. I don't know. I guess it's sort of just whatever.
You mean like adequately portrays women. I mean, like, you look at somebody like, who's that guy who writes all those misogynist pieces? I don't ever know if he's tongue-in-cheek or if he's for real, you know who I'm thinking of? He wrote, like, Reason to Be Pretty.
Oh, Neil LaBute. Yeah.
Right. Like, what's he doing? You know? Is that what you mean? Like, is he, I mean, or like David Mamet, or somebody who just seems to, the men are...
Yeah, I guess it's playwrights who are giving both men and women agency on stage or
okay.
complexity on stage. It's hard because I don't want to, you know, influence the way that it comes across. I don't know.
I think I have. I have a better idea than when you first asked the question.
Yeah.
But I think even with writers like, especially like Neil LaBute, I think I'm hoping he's making a point as opposed to saying this is I'm putting a mirror up to relationships. I'm hoping he's making a point, but I never really know
yeah.
with him. So sort of adequately I mean, I'm not sure there's any sort of one type of female or male character. I mean, what comes, certainly, I think Teresa Riebeck does a great job with the sort of high-strung, emotionally torn, over-programmed woman, but who... God, I mean, I keep thinking about Bozeman and Lena, played by Fugard. Do you know that play?
Mm-mm.
That's a really hard question because every time my brain goes like, but then there's.
I guess I can ask you a little bit of a different question.
Yeah,
don't worry about that. No, this is still in the works.
Okay, yeah, that's a hard but good question.
Yeah. What about this? What about a woman character or a man character, either way, but that has really struck you when watching a play?
Mm.
That they just. I don't know. They like have a power over you that you really know that they're in control. But also, I mean, they can be vulnerable too, I guess. But like,
that they're a full person.
Yeah, that they're a full person. Yeah.
Where you can, it's funny because I'm thinking of like the old classics. Like, I think I can't remember her name. The wife in Death of a Salesman is an amazing character. I think Amanda Winfield in.
Yeah.
Space in there.
The Glass Menagerie.
Glass Menagerie. I'm trying to think of more contemporary. I often come out of contemporary plays, like more contemporary plays, thinking the woman, I'm not going to pull up an example, that was not fully drawn. So, I mean, it's interesting that, like, to me that my brain's going back to the like, 50s or whenever these plays were written.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at people like Sam Shepard, who writes great men, but barely touches the women. I'm trying to think of who these days. I wish I'd seen the Vera Stark play. Did you see that?
No.
Better Knowledge. Wow, this piece that I'm also like, there's big gaps in what I've seen and haven't seen, but I'm sort of going to what I've seen recently, like Death of a Salesman, but this piece on The Shape She Makes, which I hope comes from New York, that was a fully drawn, really fully drawn character.
What about the character sort of?
Well, the thing that was interesting was it was the first, I don't really like, dance that much, but this was a dance theater piece, and it successfully portrayed her struggle. It was, you know, a very cliche story about a woman with an alcoholic husband and a daughter who, and she's estranged from him, and a daughter who wants to reconnect with him, and through dance you got, dance and dialogue, you got her reasons for why she was drawn to him, why she stayed with him, why she had to leave him, why it was difficult for her to deal with her daughter's needs. You got the full, she was a really sympathetic character. So I think when I think of strong characters or people who move me, it's people who you, no matter what they do, you understand. I mean, it's almost great to see like a villainous character, like or kind of someone who's got, you know, like an Amanda Winfield is just so great because she's so real, and so someone who can make them real without sort of tipping into like maudlin and purple and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what other people say. What some of the other?
Actually, it's funny. I was thinking about Aditi Kapil said Linda from Death of a Salesman.
Oh,
she
really?
Actually, she said that,
huh.
That even though, I mean, you know, it's...
She jumps out.
Yeah, she's...
Has she recently seen it? I don't think she would have come to mind if I hadn't.
I don't think she... Yeah, I don't think she's seen it recently.
Mm-hmm.
She also mentioned Sam Shepard, but she mentioned Fool for Love. The character May, I think.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I forgot about her. I was thinking more of the big... There's got to be...
Yeah, no, she. But it's interesting about how even those characters... Oh, no, she did also mention Tennessee Williams. Yeah.
Oh, he's so great with women.
Yeah.
And Streetcar.
Yeah.
Those two women. Wow, you get them. So you need to... Yeah, so it feels like... I'd love to think of somebody who's sort of alive today and not a white man who... And I'm sure they exist. Who presents a balanced sort of character.
The first person I interviewed was Julie Murray Myatt, and she said the mother and the daughter from August Osage County. That's who she said.
Oh, I hated that.
You hated that play?
I hated that play. God. I think I'm the only one who hated that play.
Really?
Oh, I thought it was just a big soap opera driving me crazy. But yeah, I don't know about the two women in Night Mother.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
I mean, I think what's interesting, it's great to remember the name, but what's great about her is she's got so many wonderful, wonderful speeches. And you just see right through to everything. That is such a well-crafted play.
Yeah.
I just read, because my daughter was doing a paper on it, Raising in the Sun. What a great play. I forgot how great that play is.
Yeah.
It's great, I mean, a great male character. Wow. But it's funny, I feel like that question should yield like 10 names, like right off the top of my head. And it's weird to me that I can't, I mean, it feels like icky to me that I don't have, you know, like 10 names to throw out.
Yeah.
What about for you? I know you're not the interviewee here.
Let's see. Strong woman character. I go back to Rosalind from As You Like It. I don't know why, but I really have fallen in love with Rosalind's story about just like her just going after what she wants. I don't know. I think that there are so many other Shakespeare plays that just... do not do that. You know, you think of, like, Hamlet with Ophelia. You think of other different stories, and I think that Rosalind just has so much more agency than a lot of those other women. Yeah. I was just thinking about Rosalind today, actually. I don't know why, but yeah.
Your head's probably full of, like, all these
interviews. So, how would you define a strong woman character? Is it important for you to write strong women characters, and if so, why?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think for this reason that we can't come up with we can't come up with any. I think I define it as someone whose action is clear, whose vulnerabilities are present. Who learns something or who has an arc, who is in the same, who changes from beginning to end, and who, because of all those things, draws us in and makes us sympathetic. I think that would, and I think it's really important as a woman to make sure those people are there because I'm a woman. You know? I mean, I think it's important for me to draw men like that, too, but, I have a play that keeps getting, it's like my bridesmaid play, keeps getting, you know, shortlisted and wins awards and has readings, but I can't get it, having a hard time getting it produced, but it's going to have yet another reading in Chicago. Called Still Life, about a woman whose daughter doesn't come home after a series of subway bombings. And she's stuck in the same waiting game with her daughter, with her son-in-law. So it was really important to me that she not just be this weepy mother, that she be, that we see what's, you know, her full self, not just seen through the prism of a mother. And I guess that's the potential danger with women, is they're just seen in relationship to, or as a mother or as a wife or as a, that they be full. And I think the reason Linda keeps coming up is she's a full person.
Yeah.
Yeah. With everything, with all the, you know, mistakes that go along with being a full person. But yeah, I think it's important. I think women writers need to do that. Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you think about your gender a lot when you write?
No. I don't. I mean, I think I probably think about it more than I realize. I think unconsciously, probably. But it doesn't really... I like writing men and I like writing women. And I only have one play which is just two women. Everything else has a mix. And... I come at it from a different place because I am a woman. After 9/11, I went through a whole phase of like maternal impotence plays because I felt like and we were living in New York at the time. I felt like I cannot protect my children against the world anymore, and my plays reflected that. So I think I probably, you know, come at it from a certain female perspective of where I'm at in my life at that time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Have you ever started writing a play and the gender of a main character changed during your writing process?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. It did, actually, once. And I don't remember why. Oh, I do remember why. It was the same play, Still Life. And the mother is followed by a photographer, which is another story. But initially the photographer was a young man, and then I wanted it to be, because I changed it to a young woman because I wanted the absence of the daughter who'd been blown up in the subway to somehow play into what happened between them. I thought that would make it a stronger play. So then I think that was the only time I switched. And it worked so much better. Switched it.
How far into the writing process did that change?
I don't remember. They take so ridiculously long. probably a year and it just, I was like, why is this? Because you're always asking, how can I make it stronger? I mean, I assume everybody you've talked to is just rewrite nuts. So it's all about getting to the end and then saying, wait a minute, I don't know, what if I made it? So that definitely made it a stronger play. I think seeing relationships between women on stage, two women on stage, is interesting. You don't have a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Bechdel test is really interesting. Do you know about the Bechdel test?
No.
This is Alison Bechdel, who is a graphic novel writer, and she conducted this study about looking at women, I don't know if it was just in film or if it was other places, but and seeing if women were having a conversation other than men for a number of minutes.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many movies do not pass the Bechdel test.
Oh, my God.
Because, I mean, you think about just like they're there to be the mother, they're there to be the wife or whatever, but it's really fascinating that there are not that many that pass. I mean, like, but you think now, like, Orange is the New Black definitely passes, which I don't know if you watched.
I never have seen it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to see it, yeah.
I really fell in love with it because it basically that reason, the fact that there were so many women relationships going on, just like, and it didn't matter that they're, you know, the minor roles that were men were not involved. It was okay that it was just...
Right.
You know.
Well, it's kind of like when you have like TV shows or movies where there's a gay person and they're identified, they're just there to be gay.
Exactly.
You know, as opposed to, I think it's actually great that you've got gay people in like TV shows like Modern Family, but they're just they're pigeonholed into, like, I'm the gay, and they seem more like roommates than than married people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there was a show called Brothers and Sisters by some playwright, and there was just a gay guy, and he had other things besides being gay as part of his character, and it's that same idea that, you know, if all you're doing is represented on film or on stage as in relation to a man, which is like every man at play.
So many people have mentioned men recently. I don't know. It's funny.
Well, if you're talking about women,
yes.
And again, I don't know if he's like riffing on it or this is his real. You think I am?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know he had that huge Broadway flop like last year because he tried to write women characters with Deborah Winger and somebody else, maybe Patti LuPone, and it just was a disaster. He doesn't know how to write women.
Interesting. Because I know so many, I've asked people saying, you know, do you feel like, do you like writing men characters? And they say, yeah, I love it, you know?
Yeah.
That's funny.
But they're probably really men characters. I don't think you could flip too many men characters and make them women and have the play work.
Mm-hmm.
And probably vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If or when during the writing process do you start thinking about the audience? Do you feel you write for a certain audience?
No, that's probably my biggest problem. I don't really care about the. You can't. You gotta enter the world. I feel like if I create the world, then the audience will come.
Mm.
I do not write commercial plays. I really wish I knew how. I really do. I think if you think about the audience, then you leave the world, and then you're doomed. I think what's so fun about it, for me, is you enter that world, and the deeper you get in that world through each draft, the more everybody's working. And if you think about, you know, somebody like opening candy in the third aisle, you'll never do it. But I think there are people who really do think about that, and they're probably very successful.
Has it always been the case that you haven't thought about the audience, or has it been something that you've just trained yourself to do?
I never thought about the audience.
Wow. That's so healthy. That's so great.
I do think that when I'm writing on a deadline, like when I knew I was having the Romeo Chang and the warm-up lap, I write more more efficiently when I know there will be an audience, when I know there's a deadline, as opposed to just, I'm going to try this or I'm going to try that. I had a play called Sister, Sister, which went through had several off-Broadway readings.
Mm-hmm.
And with each reading, as it came up, I made huge leaps in the development process because there would be people in the seats. So in that way, I did think about it, but not like, would they like it or not, more just, how do I complete this play?
Yeah.
And that's great. Deadlines are great. They really are. I do think, I don't know if you're going to get there in your line of questioning, but I do think there are places for women playwrights in the world that are specifically sort of places where women playwrights are their work is done because they're women. I don't know if you know about them.
So places that specifically want women playwrights or just
that only do women playwrights.
Right.
So I'd be happy to tell you about that.
Yeah, I would love
that.
To. I mean, I know I've heard about Women's Project Theater in New York.
Yes, that's probably the most prominent.
Yeah.
Also in New York is New George's, which has been around for like 20 years. One in OB, only does women. Susan Bernfield, their artistic director, is amazing. And I had a play workshop there. They do it at all levels. They do little workshops, they do productions, they do little, like, let's put shows on in bars. So I think in New York, those are the two biggies, with women's,
mm-hmm.
women's project being the big boy.
Mm-hmm.
there's a contest. I mean, this show I'm having, the when Still I've done in Chicago, that's a theater that only does women.
Hmm.
Women's, it's not just women writers, but they need women-centric plays.
Hmm.
Plays where the main, where there are women characters who are Linda
mm-hmm.
types. That's all she wants to do. She really wants to bring that up. And that theater is called Artemisia.
Hmm.
There's a contest in Colorado that I had a play in April called Six Women Playwrights Festival. So there are places that say, let's focus on women, which is great.
Yeah. Do you prefer to work at those places? I mean, to hear your plays?
Yeah, a better shot. You know, I mean, I think it's not a coincidence that I've had something at New George's at the Women's Play Festival and now at Indonesia.
Yeah.
I think you have a better shot
because
I'm not competing with men.
I think
that's what's so great about the Kilroy thing. It's just, and they, that the piece in the New York Times about it, the next thing, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also something in Boston. Company One does something called...
Oh, yeah, the Double X Playlab.
Yes.
They just did that.
Did you go?
No, I couldn't go, but that sounds amazing.
Yes.
And I was confused, though, because it's a weekend, but then they're doing one of the plays, a full production of it. Yeah.
Right. So I think, yeah, I was confused by that, too.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted to throw it in to kind of get some steam on it. I don't think that's minority women. Because it was an Asian woman and two African Americans. I'm not sure if that's their intent or just happened to be working.
But it's amazing that it's an entire weekend and just they get to do readings and workshops and performances.
Yes. And actually, I can give them serious consideration for their coming, because I know one of the people who had a piece, there is at least in discussions with Company One about possibly.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, that's great. I mean, it would be great if, you know, that didn't have to exist, but it's great that they do exist.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What kind of theater do you think is the easiest to get produced? Do you ever feel pressure to create plays that fit in with this mold?
I don't, but easiest to get produced. I mean, anything I get, I'm competing. Anything I lose, I'm losing up with along with 700 other writers. It's crazy. I mean, I think the higher the ticket price, the harder the more competitive it is. I have formed with another playwrights, Boston Public Works, and I'm with Kate Toby by that.
No.
Do you have a 13P?
13 people? No.
In New York. Like 10 years ago, this group of playwrights got together and called themselves 13, it was 13 playwrights called 13P.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided they were like fed up with the development process and everything. They produced, and so they formed their own company with the intent to produce one, each person had one production in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on to be, many of them, like very good right now. Sarah Rules in their Madeline George, Sharon Callahan, So, we have formed Boston Public Works, which is based on that. And there's actually one in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing our first play in October. It's eight of us, and we are going to, it's like a little company, it's a nonprofit company, and we're each having one of our plays produced in Boston.
Wow.
And in that company, I think the majority of them are women.
Wow.
So, but that is kind of us, I think, because of like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, which we have an Indiegogo campaign going right now, you can kind of, there's more avenues to kind of self-produce.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think nobody's holding a gun in my head to say I'm ready to play. I'm frustrated every time I get a rejection. And interestingly, I thought this was interesting with you coming over today. I got I can't really tell you the name of the contest because I'm going to apply again next year. But I got a notice that I was a semifinalist in kind of a big deal, national contest that you get money for.
Wow.
And so I went on the website and I saw, wanted to see who won. So I'm a semi-finalist. There were finalists who took first, second, or third place. All men. I went and looked previous years, the last like 3 years, first, second, or third place. These are for big money prizes. All men. It was like weird. It's
wow.
almost weird now to see just men. It's almost like you think they would say like, and I don't know if they're all white men. I hope they aren't. But it's weird.
Yeah.
So actually, I was thinking next time I apply, maybe like putting a mask thing on and just seeing what happened. So I think it's really hard to get produced. I don't know how much it would have to do with being a woman, but I just think it's really ridiculously competitive. Even for like nothing little things, there are hundreds of playwrights who are competing. I mean, I think Kate gets like 500 people when you try to do the Boston Theater Marathon.
Right.
It's nutty. It's nutty. So it's hard. But it's great that there's some aspects, some availability to do it yourself.
Yeah. No, that probably makes a big difference about being able to start your own company and do what you want to do and you know.
That's great. And also it makes the rejections a little easier, too, because
yeah.
I know there's a production waiting for me out there.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to be accepted by the... I mean, even when I looked at when I looked at the Kilroy thing, I was thinking, well, they went to mostly establishment theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, even in doing that, there are still gatekeepers, even in coming to this list. So,
that is definitely.
It's like, wow, why did, and the little piece of me was like, why are you asking men? You know, there were a lot of men on the list.
Are there characters or plays that you still haven't found a place for? Are there outside forces that have prevented you from writing these characters or plays?
No. I mean, I think that's the beauty of not caring if anybody sees it. Now, I mean, I think if you're going to do this,
mm-hmm.
If they're in my head and I want them on the paper, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
I have plays that I can't figure out how to, I can't solve the problems with them, but not that's not because I'm like, I don't want to put them in that person's play.
Mm-hmm.
I think, did anyone say yes to that question?
Yeah. There are people who, they've had plays that just like they haven't been successful being produced, or characters that they've been having a hard time writing, or, yeah. It's funny.
I don't know. Well, I certainly have plays that are problematic or I can't get them produced, but it's not the case. But I wouldn't change the character, but I try to solve the problems of the play. Or,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many reasons why theaters reject you. And a lot of it has to do with how successful, you know, what your track record is. A lot of them want names. It's very difficult. You have to not think about any of that. It's hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard if you want to make a living out of them. And I'm lucky that the guy and then making dishes is... like, you know, goes to a job, you know. Otherwise, like, I couldn't do this.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I make so little money.
Mm-hmm. What would gender parity in the theater look like for you? So, you already sort of mentioned that gender parity is a very ambiguous term right now.
It's a very hot term, right?
It is.
It's a really hot term. I don't know, you know, I think about, like, kind of colorblind casting, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, but I don't think you can have that equivalent with, you know, what, I mean, there are plays where men play women and women play men, I guess, but would it be more, I don't know that you could have like the same number of women characters as men. I don't know what it is. I mean, what do you think it is?
I don't know. It's funny. Everybody has just been giving different answers, and somebody was talking about, you know, making sure that monetarily that all, you know, playwrights are getting, you know, equal share of the grants and the money and the commissions or whatever it is. I mean, that's definitely something that would make a big difference. What else?
Oh, so they mean, you mean gender parity as the writer?
Well, that's the hard part about it, is that I was at the Gender Parity Task Force meeting a few weeks ago in Boston, and it's funny because we had a big group of people, you know, people who were playwrights, people who were not, people who were professors, people who were actors.
Where was
this? It was at Stage Source, and I know it's still, if you want to be a part of it, you definitely can.
What is the, like, be a part of what?
So, they're trying to, I don't even know what it's going to be called yet, but it's like we have all these smaller groups that we're going to be a part of, and I think there are different missions for each group, and to just really do something, I guess. I'm going to be a part of the university outreach, just sort of talking to universities about making sure that their seasons are more diversified, things like that. What else? There's another group that wants to make a women's theater festival, like a larger one, in Boston. What other ones? Well, the statistics, they really, really want to be doing more data research. That's a big part of the task force, what they're trying to do.
Did you come up on Alana Brown's day?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you speak to her?
Not yet. I met her, but everybody has been saying you should meet Alana.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's
so
funny.
Good luck. And they also said good luck because she's very busy and hard to pin down. But she's like, I just see on Twitter, she's just crazy on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just crazy because everybody at that meeting was talking about sort of their own vision for gender parity, and
right.
It was really, because we were trying to create, like, a mission statement, but it was so difficult, because, you know, then an actor would say, well, what about us, you know, what about, like, the roles that we're allowed to play, and then a playwright would say, well, what about this, you know, and so it's really hard to narrow down what gender parity would look like, you know?
It seems like it has to be defined before you can move forward.
Yeah.
But it also seems like I had an English teacher who said you can't understand anything, but you can't categorize something you don't understand.
Mm.
So it feels to me like gender parity is something I can't categorize because I understand the need for it. I mean, I understand where the need comes from, but I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It seems so raw and green, and people are just. It seems like it's, I mean, I don't think we're in like a white male hierarchy kind of thing anymore, but maybe I'm wrong. But I don't know, I'd love to know, like, how the artistic directors, how the public members of the artistic directors.
Yeah.
I was just, I mean, as I think about, like, I was just stunned by how many men were on that list of people picking women.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that. I mean, that's great. That's that makes a really big, I don't know, big difference. And not a big difference, a big message, I guess, if you look at that and you see that most of the people.
But maybe found me thinking, like, how many power brokers are male? But anyway, I don't know what gender, parity is. It seems like just very hot, but I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It seems like, well, I wonder if, like, feminism had the same problems when it was first starting. I don't really, you know. So even though you're kind of in the midst of it, you're still struggling with how to define it.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, there's so many aspects, too. It's like people kept wanting to talk about, I mean, rightfully so, they wanted to talk about, you know, women of color and how they play into it, you know? And it's like, and people kept saying, I think at the original meeting in April, they said, look, that's a big issue, but
right.
We can't talk about that right now. And I was thinking,
someone
you need to talk about it right now. Like, you know, and so.
Who was running this?
Stage Source they live streamed it, actually. So I watched it on
the
television. And I know it's impossible to talk about.
Julie, somebody?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it's impossible to talk about everything, you know, and get it resolved in one meeting. But
right.
You need to talk about. Intersection.
Well, started the conversation.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's so many branches. And do you have any African American women on your list?
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked to Alana yet, but she said that she was going to connect me with more women of color, and I would love to talk to them.
Okay.
I think who she mentioned.
Obehi.
Maybe.
Obehi Janice. She would be great to talk
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
She's.
Yeah, but I would love to talk to just a diverse group of women and really see what people
yeah.
are thinking.
Yeah, Obehi had something in the play, the Double X.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I would be, can certainly give you her email, and she would
yeah.
say, I gave it to you.
That'd be great, yeah.
because they certainly have a. But I don't know. I feel like the really important questions you're asking about gender and parody and stuff. My head hurts when I try to think about it. And I really wonder how much subliminally, even though I don't know exactly what that is, how much subliminally that's playing into my work. I suspect it is. Going back to sort of the very beginning of the conversation, that I think if someone were to see my plays, they would say they were written by a woman. So I don't know. I know it's kind of like steam. I grab on the steam. I think it's great you're doing this.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean,
how the hell you're gonna put it all together?
I'm still trying to figure that out too. But I think it's really okay that if people are stumped by a question, you know. I mean, I think that
says something. That's information.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what language they can come up with to. When it feels like there's no language for it, it's frustrating.
Yeah, no, that's really true. I feel like for sociology, that's a big part of what we've been talking about, that language really can define reality, and if you don't have a way to phrase it,
right,
you can't define it, because,
right.
You know, I think that, I think it was in a sociology class that one of my professors was talking about how when she was growing up in Pakistan that there wasn't a word for sexual harassment or something like that, and so, like, women knew how it, or men too, but they knew what it was. They could describe it, like they could like feel it, you know, and they could sort of talk about it with each other that they were feeling objectified, but like they didn't know, they didn't have a word for it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And see how far we've come. I mean,
yeah.
To the point of we have laws that are specifically, that we have found a language. So I think what you guys are doing is kind of like a dog, you know, trying to get their phone. You know, you're not throwing up your hands and saying, we're just like getting. Right, I'm very outside of it, trying to get in. That's like great that you're that. I totally identify with that because that's how I think I feel about it. It's like a thing, but we don't know what to do with it. Same with racism. It's probably the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what people think though. I wonder what like establishment thinks about it. They just think it's like a crunchy weird thing, or if they think it's a real thing, or threatened by it, or
it's hard because I think that, you know, like the campaign for 50-50 by 2020, I mean, obviously, like that would make a big difference if, you know, 50% across the board of plays produced was women, and, you know, but like I still feel like you need to change mentality as well, besides just the numbers. So if you say like I want the numbers, I mean, yes, they can deliver that, hopefully, someday.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. I feel like nothing is really going to change until the mentality is there, that it's normal, that it's acceptable.
Right. And I wonder, I wonder how men feel about it.
Right.
I mean, that's you know, cut into their piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, it's kind of like your vagina monologue. I mean, you guys can't figure out yet. You know that you want to... You know that it's outdated. You know that it's there's flaws in the system, and that, you know, that we don't quite know how to. So, I mean, it's a lot like the challenge of creating a play is not unlike that. You're going to keep discovering as you kind of chip away at it.
Yeah.
And I would suspect by the time you finish all these interviews, you'll have some sense. Because I imagine people are coming up with some. What was the most, I mean, I know you haven't talked to that many people, but has anyone given you a cogent idea of what gender parity would look like?
I'm trying to think. I think it was sort of the first person I talked to, Julie, was saying, you know, just like, I guess I had sort of asked her a different question at one point. I said, what would you tell a young playwright? Young woman playwright starting now, and she really just said, you know, do what you want to do, be what you want to be, don't worry about what other people are doing, just like what you said about, like, I don't worry about an audience or, you know, and I think that women should, and men should be able to have that freedom. They shouldn't be worried about how they're going to be viewed or how they're, you know, they're going to be produced.
I think that's the only way that you're going to truly feel like you're, released or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but it's honest.
Yeah.
And it's, like, organic, that it works.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't work if it's not real. But
yeah.
Also, it's such a time commitment. I mean, I can't imagine working on something that I didn't, that I was, like, trying to, that I didn't feel passionate about. I just can't imagine, diving in for 2 years on something that I really care about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That definitely makes a big difference if you're sitting down and you're writing and you really are passionate about what you're...
Right, I mean, think about, like, classes you don't like. How do you do the work for them? Or
yeah, it's a lot more difficult.
Absolutely. Do you have to have this, like, written by, like, August or something crazy like that?
So the thing is, I'm actually studying abroad in the fall, and there's this presentation at the beginning of the fall, in, like, October, where everybody's going to be kind of presenting what they've done. And so I don't know exactly how I'm going to be presenting since I won't be there. But hopefully I'm going to have...
Since you won't be there?
Yeah, so I'll be in London, so I will be able to present.
Nice.
so I don't... I hope that I can sort of give people the resources that they need. Like, I want to have all the interviews online available and having people be able to listen to audio clips if they want to. Have the playwright bios on there. What else? Yeah, I really hope that it's something, like an actual experience that you really get to look and see all these different voices and learn something, yeah.
Wow. Well, I will definitely check it out.
Thanks.